You're listening to a podcast from the University of Manchester. Welcome to the Research Beacons podcast, a series of illuminating conversations that shine a light on research at Manchester and our innovative solutions to global challenges. Our Research Beacons podcast series highlights how researchers at the University of Manchester are finding solutions to global challenges across five key areas: advanced materials, cancer, energy, global inequalities, and industrial biotechnology, our key research beacons.
Welcome to part two of our Spotlight on Energy podcast, where we're shining a light on energy research at Manchester. We've been joined by experts from across the university to hear how their work is helping to keep electricity flowing and keep the lights on. Infrastructure improvements are necessary to avoid energy shortfalls, including major new electricity lines and a smart grid, and work to enhance the resilience of our energy network is vital. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Vidhi Pisapati, Dr. Matthäus Panteli, and PhD student Matt Nobels. So, over to you, Vidhi. Why don't you tell us a bit about who you are and what you do?
I'm a research fellow in high voltage engineering, and my area is conditioning, monitoring, and asset health. So what I tend to do is try to understand the health of equipment, high voltage equipment that's on the network, which is predominantly a aging network. So we try to find anything, faults that happen, and try and see if we can predict failures before they happen. I work in UK's largest high voltage lab of any academic institution, so we can reach voltages that are capable of testing the equipment connected on UK's network. So UK's largest transmission voltage at the moment is 400 kV AC. Our equipment can go to twice that, and we can also do impulse testing, so lightning testing on equipment. And we try and replicate things that could happen on a real network, and that's basically what I do. So I test equipment, sometimes to failure, to understand if we can pick up a little diagnostic to see what happens to equipment before they actually go bang.
So I think you've probably made a lot of people very jealous by working in such a fantastic laboratory, being able to generate lightning strikes and the works. What actually got you involved in this area of research in the first place?
I came to the university to a master's in power systems, and at that time we were seeing, and this was 15, 16 years ago, and there was a massive shift in what was going to happen in terms of the renewables being connected to the network. So it not only was it a very interesting area, but it was a very attractive area from an employment perspective. So I got interested in high voltage engineering. I did a PhD on lightning, which meant I did a lot of hands-on testing on and using the equipment in the high voltage lab. And slowly that shift is where I started enjoying testing equipment to failure, understanding why things failed. It's almost like an MOT or a blood test. We try and pick up signatures on equipment to make sure or to understand what's happening to it, an aging network especially. I've been in the area for a good 15 years now, and I genuinely enjoy it. Especially when you get to use some cool equipment that not a lot of other universities do have in the world. So it's a great place to be at the moment, yeah.
Fantastic. Sounds really exciting. And then over to you, Matthäus. Do you want to answer the same question? Tell us a bit about who you are and what you're involved in.
Thank you very much, Vicky. So I'm a lecturer in resilient low-carbon energy systems in the power generating division here at the University of Manchester. So my main research area is looking at how we can make the transition to low-carbon energy systems while maintaining high levels of quality of electricity supplied to the customers. The energy landscape is currently going through a lot of changes, drastic changes, as you said, Vicky. We have the penetration of emerging technologies such as battery energy systems, PV, intermediate renewable sources, which bring many benefits to the decarbonization of the energy systems, as well as many challenges. So my research focuses on developing advanced mathematical tools to see how we can optimize the operation and the planning of an energy system to actually accommodate and facilitate the benefits of these low-carbon technologies. A power outage in the electricity infrastructure can have cascading effects on other infrastructure, for example, communications, transportation, and so on. So in my research area, I'm also looking at how to evaluate these interdependencies between critical infrastructures and how to build a resilient infrastructure in UK against extreme events and catastrophic impacts. We're doing work both in UK, looking at the resilience of the UK electricity grid, as well as internationally. So we are leading international projects at the University of Manchester under the Global Challenges Research Fund. We're looking at solving global challenges faced mainly from the Global South, where we're looking at the electrification challenges in developing countries, how to build a resilient, sustainable grid for countries that are currently developing and are exposed to extreme weather events. So our research goes far beyond just UK, but they need to tackle as well global challenges.
Great stuff. And then finally over to you, Matt. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're up to at the moment?
Yeah, thank you, Vicky. So I'm a final year PhD student at the Power Systems Research Group here in Manchester. And I look at the resilience of power networks. That means how to keep the lights on during extreme events and severe weather conditions. And my particular research interest is that while it's fairly straightforward to avoid these blackouts by just building more and more transmission lines and building more and more generation capacity, it's also a very expensive way of doing it. So I look more at methods that exploit or use the skills and features modern smart grid already has in order to avoid these blackouts from happening.
Great. And what got you interested in all of this?
So I think keeping the lights on is actually one of the main challenges of our electricity supply at the moment. And we are actually quite dependent on electricity because everything we use, everything we do somehow depends on electricity. We use communications, we use public transport. Some people heat their homes with electricity. So every single aspect depends on electricity. And while we have to make sure the lights stay on, we also have to make sure everything is affordable and sustainable. And I think this is a very interesting and challenging task, and it's very fascinating to look at.
So it's great that we've got our researchers on the case looking at all these issues. So obviously, kind of here in the UK, we do tend to take it for granted that when we switch on that light switch and we're wanting to watch something on Netflix, it's always going to be there and available. You kind of mentioned that it's an area that's a bit of a challenge. How worried should we be about our electricity supply? Should we, you know, do you think the general public are quite complacent about it?
I think there is a significant shift in how we use electricity and how we generate electricity as well. I don't want to say the word use worry, but I think the change is happening at a very alarming rate. That change in how we generate, how we use, how we distribute and how we transmit energy is going to have a big impact in how we actually use it. So if everyone has an electric car, that will change the demand. That will also have an impact on the supply. That actually will have an impact on the equipment that's on the network. So all of these things need to be looked at. So if one event happens, you can have a cascading effect on the network. And with our over-reliance on electricity, anything of that sort can actually have a huge impact on our day-to-day life. So, yeah, it is something that has to be thought for and looked at.
Just to echo what Vidi said, which I totally agree, I would not say we should be worried, as National Grid is making a fantastic job in keeping the reliability of the grid at 99.9999%, but there's still that 0.0001% of events that we should worry about. And it's what we called in our research area high-impact, low-probability events. As I said before, the August 2019 blackout, it was indeed, as mentioned from the CEO of National Grid, a once every 30 years event. So there are a lot of changes going on in the energy landscape, which we don't fully understand yet, and we still need to better model, better understand their impacts and their challenges that they can impose on the electricity grid, as well as the exposure of the power grid to more and more frequent extreme weather events challenge the traditional way that the system has been designed and operated for many decades now. So I would not say we should worry, but what I would like to say is that we should rethink a bit the way that we are designing, planning and operating the power system in order to be resilient and flexible enough to accommodate the emerging technologies and all the challenges that come with these technologies, kind of technologies in the future.
So there's a lot of planning ahead that's involved here and looking at what's on the horizon and acting accordingly.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then can you tell us kind of a little bit more, obviously you've kind of touched on this, about how your research has actually benefited us in the UK or a country across the globe? Is there any sort of specific examples you can tell us about?
Yes, so basically at the University of Manchester, we're leading a number of international projects with partners from around the world. I would say the highlight of our research so far have been the winning of the 2018 Newton Prize, which is basically an annual prize awarded from the British government to projects that demonstrated excellence in impact, innovation, and research. And that project related to a joint project we had with Chile, which we're aiming to design the electricity grid to be robust and resilient against earthquakes. And we're very happy that our planning and optimization tool that we developed has been actually be adapted from the electricity coordinator in Chile, which led so far to over $50 million of investments in the Chilean grid, which led to another project to broaden the impact of our mathematical tools to other countries in Latin America to hopefully make those countries more resilient and sustainable.
Fantastic. Are there any examples of for the UK as well of the work you've been doing here at the university that will have an impact for us over here?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we completed successfully a project a couple of years ago called Resilience Electricity Networks from Great Britain, which was funded from the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council here in UK, where we're looking at the impact of climate change and extreme weather events on the resilience of transmission networks. So basically, we had a very nice partnership with the Tyndall Centre here in Manchester, where we're getting different future climate scenarios, future demand scenarios, and generation scenarios for UK. And then we're using those scenarios to basically assess the future resilience of the grid against the many challenges you mentioned at the beginning, that basically will experience different changes in generation, demand behavior, exposure to different weather events, and so on, to make the electricity infrastructure of UK more resilient to such events. And we also had the opportunity to work closely with social scientists. So we expanded, if you like, the core engineering work that we're very good at as engineers to look more into the social aspects of climate change and the reliance of electricity supply into our work as well.
Fantastic. So there's a real mix of kind of disciplines coming together to help address this as a challenge as well, which is great to hear. What do you think are the kind of key challenges on the horizon over the next 5 years? What are the things we need to really be focused on tackling?
I think there's a few things, actually. I think getting to grips on how we will be using electricity is probably one of the key agendas, at least from my perspective. For me, it's understanding, especially the equipment. So we work significantly with a lot of the utilities, so National Grid, Scottish and Southern Energy, WPD, and we're always checking equipment, testing equipment to understand aging, and we're trying to understand the impact of all the change in infrastructure that's going to happen, especially electric vehicles, distribution generation, wind, and what that would cause to the equipment. And I think that's actually quite an important thing, because the shift that we are seeing right now is only going to go ahead, not even the next 5 years, so you're talking next 10, next 15 years. We are in a very comfortable state at the moment, where we turn on, like you said, you turn the switch on and then it's an uninterrupted power supply. And to expect that to happen for the next 5, 10, 15 years when you have such a significant change. And I think the talk recently about electric vehicles being the only mode of personal transport in the next 15 years, almost to a certain extent, taking out petrol and diesel vehicles, will have a significant impact on the infrastructure. So I think the next 5 years we'll see how that is going to change our network and what we do on the network to almost give it that extra strength, for instance. So yeah, quite exciting times coming forward. Yeah,
we should not only look at this from the perspective of the industry or the academics, but also from the perspective of the society. And people tend to less think about the availability of electricity, but the availability of services. So it doesn't really matter how the home is warm or how they get transported, as long as their home is warm and they get transported. So from the perspective of the resilience, if people still have access to these services, even during a blackout, then the impact of these outages would be less severe.
I agree with Vidi and Madina, just to further emphasize the need for flexibility in our electricity grid looking ahead in the future, because we have traditionally designed the system to be robust and redundant enough to deal with abnormal contingencies, let's say. So we are doing a very good job in, for example, losing an element in the system, a transformer, a line as well. We made a very good job in keeping the lights on under these expected conditions. But we see more and more events hitting the network that we didn't predict to design the system against for. So building embedded flexibility in the system in order to be able to cope with potentially unforeseen contingencies and events is becoming very, very critical in the future.
What kind of events have been hitting us that we've not seen before? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, I mean, the most evident example is the blackout that happened in UK in August 2019, where basically we lost a number of assets in the power grid more or less at the same time, which that wasn't experienced, as far as I know, in the history of UK.
There was a lightning strike involved in that as well, and it's interesting, and that's the kind of things that you have to account for, and to a certain extent, you're planning abnormal events that you don't know that are going to happen, if that's the right word to use, you know what I mean? So you're almost trying to predict, to a certain extent, these events that could happen. Again, I like that word that Matthias was using, high impact, but low probability. But the sheer fact of the high impact makes us have to think about it and worry about it. Our network is a living thing, and that's the thing that people need to understand. It's happening now as we speak it. So changes are immediate. The network has been planned with a surplus, and that surplus will not be a surplus as we move towards higher electrification.
So we need to redefine that surplus.
Exactly. So where does that come from? So this and Matt actually highlighted that as well. As a community, we are used to having that service. That could be the heating, that could be you turning on your kettle or you're turning on your TV. And then suddenly, if you had to make a choice between what you turn on and when you turn it on, you will start to ask questions. But all of these are things that networks are thinking about, to be fair. They do think about this. Distribution networks do think about this. Transmission networks do think about it. So there is a reason why they're so robust. They were heavily, heavily designed to take on these hits. But we are doing more on it and expecting more of it as well, which is kind of where we all come in, really.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, just to add to what Vidi said, I mean, on distribution networks, I mean, the UK blackout in 2019 is a great example of the impact of the distribution networks as well, reliability on the overall electricity grid, because we lost generation.
And there's a huge disruption on the railway network as well. Vicky, were you in the train?
Yeah, I was on a train trapped on the hottest day of the year in July 2019, which was a little bit unpleasant, but that was caused by the sagging in the overhead lines, and the train just snarled to a halt for 3 hours.
Isn't that an interesting thing? There's a few of us in this room, and you don't have to go too far to understand that already there's things that happen that can impact our day-to-day life to a certain extent.
And it's all the external events that affect that. You've got the known knowns and the known unknowns, and then the black swan events.
Yeah, that's exactly. The black swan events, yes.
Yeah. Matt, you mentioned about lessening the impact of the blackouts through actions that we can take, like community resilience is another area. Are there any examples of countries where that has been done really well, where it's worked effectively?
There are countries which had faced lots of blackouts in the past, and people in these countries, basically, they help themselves by buying solar backup, power generation, whatever, storage systems. So it's not only electricity, it's also knowing where to access these services if the electricity failed. So, for example, if electricity fails on a large scale, then usually also the water supply fails. So the question is, where do you get water from? So you need people who know where are like clean springs that you can use, for example. So it's really like facilitating the community, so the knowledge of the community. And maybe somebody has a backup generator in the cellar. Somebody maybe has batteries which other people can use to charge their phones. So by enabling the community, you can reduce many of the impacts of such a blackout.
I guess that's all down to communications as well, to the knowledge that you're talking about of where these services are. Might come down to effective communications.
It really comes down to the support that is provided from the network operator to those vulnerable and exposed customers. And believe it or not, even in UK, there are, DNOs, distribution network operators particularly, categorize customers as vulnerable, which are very weakly connected to the main grid. For example, there are areas in Northwest, in Lake District, for example, in even in North Wales, which are exposed very frequently to outer and disconnection of electricity assets or exposure to extreme weather events, which, as Matt said, they organize as communities to deal with these events. For example, they have backup diesel generators to connect in case their electricity goes off, and it goes off much frequently than it does in metropolitan areas in UK.
I love the story. I think it was in New York, I can't remember what year, where people were out on the streets and lighting candles, and the fact that they had a blackout actually brought people together. There was a bit of a nice community atmosphere there. So I guess we need to stock up on a few candles.
Yes. I have an example of that. Actually, in UK, a friend of mine shared a few years ago there was a power outage in his area during the Christmas time. And I said, okay, that must have been horrible. And he actually told me that was the best Christmas ever, because the phones of his children ran out of battery. So they turned the candles, they sit together, played different board games and so on. They came closer as a family, and they had the best Christmas of their life.
Turn your lights off, save energy.
That's one way. Maybe we need to learn from the past, but also apply some learnings for the future as well. So finally, I've got a last question for you. If you all want to kind of maybe have a think about, if you had 5 minutes with a cabinet minister, I don't know, maybe you're stuck in a lift because the electricity has gone out and you were trapped there for a while to have a chat with them. Have you got any kind of key messages about what maybe government can be doing from a policy perspective in these areas? What focus do we need to put on certain things?
Infrastructure change is needed, and it needs a huge boost right now. For me, when I talk about infrastructure and you kind of think electric vehicles and stuff like that, I don't think we're at a point where we have a network of, let's say, fast charging points where people can just take a car and just go wherever they want for thousands of kilometres. I don't think that exists anywhere. That's one of the key reasons of when people talk about infrastructure. That, I think, is quite an interesting thing. And I think that would be something that I'd definitely discuss with someone, a decision maker, to be honest. Yeah.
I think it's very important to link the different types of infrastructure, so transport, water, electricity, all of these communication all together, and look at them from a whole system perspective to make use of any interconnection and links between them. That's one thing policymakers and then regulators as well should look at. And the other thing is strengthening the communities, prepare them for these kinds of events.
From my point of view, I was very pleased to see that Ofgem, the electricity regulator in UK, is considering resilience against unknown events in the next regulatory framework, in RIIO 2, to come active in a couple of years' time. So I'm really looking forward to see if there's going to be a change, as we discussed just now, in the way that we plan the system, we operate the system to be more flexible, to accommodate all these changes that are going on in the energy landscape. So in my opinion is that we should embed more flexibility, as I said before, in the way that we operate the system. And this needs to be captured from the regulatory framework as well, in order to enable the development of business case studies and basically the room and the area for all the new technologies to be penetrated in the system in a secure and reliable way.
Thanks ever so much for your time. You've given us a lot to think about, for external bodies to think about, as well as the general public. So I'll let you get back to the great work that you're doing in keeping our lights on and the electricity flowing.
Listen to our next energy podcast to find out more about keeping the lights on and some practical tips we can all take to help mitigate against climate change and carbon emissions. I'll be talking to Dr. John Broderick about why the term keeping the lights on is in itself problematic, and we'll be talking about the upcoming COP26 conference in Glasgow and some key themes around the research he's doing on carbon budget setting. To hear more about our research in advanced materials, cancer, energy, global inequalities, and industrial biotechnology, go to manchester.ac.uk.